Karl Menger, the founder of the Austrian School. Karl Menger founded the Austrian School of Economics in 1871 when he published a short book entitled Principles of Economics. This book revolutionized economics by shifting its primary focus from the production of material wealth to human beings striving to satisfy their wants and needs. Menger started with the subjective values of consumers and explained how they were the ultimate cause of all observable economic phenomena. Prices, wages, and rents all could be traced back to the individual choices of consumers seeking to satisfy their most important wants. Leading economic scholars, including Joseph Schumpeter and Ludwig von Mises, recognized Menger as the originator of the main ideas and doctrines of Austrian economics. Friedrich Hayek proclaimed the Austrian school's fundamental ideas belong fully and wholly to Karl Menger. What is common to the members of the Austrian school, what constitutes their peculiarity and provided the foundations for their later contributions, is their acceptance of the teaching of Karl Menger. A descendant of a distinguished family of Austrian nobility, Menger was born in 1840 in Galicia, a region of the Austro-Hungarian Empire that is today a part of Poland. Menger studied economics and later law and worked as a journalist. During his experience as an economic journalist writing about markets, Menger noticed that daily price movements could not be explained by the prevailing classical economic theory. Menger devoted 4 years to developing a new and systematic theory to explain how prices paid in real-world markets are determined. The product of Menger's efforts was his book, Principles of Economics, which helped create a revolution in economic theory. Menger shared credit for initiating the, quote, marginalist revolution with William Stanley Jevons and Leon Walras. But Menger's book was far superior to the works of Jevons and Walras, both of which employed mathematics to measure the subjective value or utility that people derive from consuming goods. After the publication of his book, Menger spent the rest of his career at the University of Vienna, and for a time he served as tutor to the young Crown Prince Rudolf von Habsburg. Menger's writing and teaching attracted a number of brilliant followers, most notably Eugen von Bamberger and Friedrich von Wieser. By the 1880s, the works of these men and other followers of Menger began to pour forth in great abundance, and the Austrian school was born. By the late 1880s, these works were being translated, and Menger's doctrines were introduced to economists in France, Italy, the Netherlands, the United States, and Great Britain. The Austrian school had achieved international recognition. To put the emergence of the Austrian school in historical context, the prevailing economic thought of the time was the classical school, as developed by David Hume, Adam Smith, and David Ricardo. These British economists demonstrated that day-to-day market prices are not the result of historical accident or the arbitrary whims of sellers. Rather, prices are determined by universal and immutable economic law. In the short run, prices are determined by supply and demand, but in the long run, they tend to equal their money or labor costs of production. The classical economists also showed how profits and losses effectively regulated the kinds and quantities of goods that businesses produced. But the great flaw of classical economists was beginning their analysis of prices by focusing on general and abstract classes of goods like bread, iron, and diamonds, and their usefulness to the human race in general. Because of this approach, they were unable to satisfactorily solve the, quote, paradox of value. Briefly stated, it's that diamonds have high exchange value but low use value, while bread or water have low exchange value but are necessities of life. Unable to resolve the paradox, classical economists simply avoided it. They downplayed use value and focused almost exclusively on exchange value, explaining a diamond's high price by its high cost of production compared to the cost of producing a loaf of bread. Their focus on costs of production as the basic cause of value led the classical economists to narrowly focus on the calculations and decisions of businessmen and to neglect the wants and choices of consumers as the active determinant of prices. In their view, economics was concerned primarily with the so-called economic man, that is, the businessman who tries to buy at low prices and sell at high prices. The classical economists concluded, therefore, that in the long run, prices of goods were determined by the relative costs of production. Menger followed a very different approach, placing human beings and their wants at the center of economics. In preparing his book, Menger wrote, "Man himself is the beginning and the end of every economy. Our science is the theory of a human being's ability to deal with his wants." Menger intended to investigate the causes of prices, wage rates, and rents actually paid every day on markets. He began his investigation with the central fact of unlimited human wants and limited resources. For Menger, the essence of economic activity was the attempt by human beings to identify and use those elements of their physical environment which would cause the satisfaction of their wants. The first sentence in Menger's book read, "All things are subject to the law of cause and effect." The things that were capable of causing the satisfaction of wants, Menger called goods. For Menger, a thing becomes a good only when individuals recognize that it is capable of being used to satisfy their wants, and they have sufficient control of the thing to actually use it for this purpose. A thing becomes an economic good when there does not exist a sufficient quantity of it to satisfy everyone's wants for it. Economic goods are therefore scarce and must be economized. This means that a person uses units of an economic good to satisfy only his most important wants, while leaving his less important wants unsatisfied. By focusing on the individual's economizing behavior, Menger showed that what is important for valuing a good are the specific or concrete wants for the good and the available supply of concrete units of the good. He thus rejected the classical economist's emphasis on abstract classes of goods. It was not bread or diamonds in general that satisfies an individual's want, but a specific pound of bread or a half-carat diamond. For Menger, the value of these concrete units of a good is determined by the satisfaction or utility derived from the marginal unit, or what we call the marginal utility. The marginal unit is the unit that is used to satisfy the least important want that can be served by the supply of the good in an individual's possession. Menger gave the example of a person living in isolation who possesses 5 identical bushels of wheat. The value of wheat is not determined by the most important use of 1 bushel of wheat, which may be to bake a quantity of bread necessary to keep him alive until next year's harvest. The value of each bushel of wheat is determined by the least important want satisfied by 1 of his 5 bushels, which may be to feed his pet parrot for a year. The satisfaction he obtains from feeding his parrot is the marginal utility of wheat, and therefore establishes the value of each and every bushel of his supply of wheat. Menger arrived at this path-breaking conclusion by reasoning that no matter which of the identical 5 bushels of wheat was lost in a fire, the owner would economize by sacrificing the least important want satisfaction of keeping his pet parrot. The remaining 4 bushels of wheat would now each have a higher value because the marginal utility would rise to the 4th most important want satisfied by a bushel of wheat, let's say distilling whiskey. This example illustrates Menger's law of marginal utility, which states, as the supply of a good possessed by an individual increases, the marginal utility and therefore the value of the good decreases. In other words, the greater the supply of a good, the less valuable is each individual unit and vice versa. Although simple, Menger's law has several powerful implications. First, it solves the paradox of value. Although diamonds may serve less important wants than the most important purposes served by water, in a normal situation, diamonds are so scarce compared to water that a carat of diamonds has a much greater marginal utility and therefore value than a gallon of water. However, if water were suddenly to become more scarce than diamonds, say to a man dying of thirst in the desert, then he would be willing to trade a nearly flawless 10-carat diamond for a single gallon of water. Second, the law of marginal utility implies that value is not an objective or intrinsic quality, and it doesn't depend on the cost of producing a good. Rather, value results from an individual's judgment of the importance of a thing in satisfying his wants. Third, this means that the value of a good is imputed backwards from consumer wants to the services of a good in satisfying those wants, and finally to the physical good itself. For example, a new Maserati automobile is not valuable in itself. It's valuable only because it provides a flow of services to satisfy wants for luxurious transportation that are regarded as highly important by its would-be buyer or owner. Menger used the notion of the imputation of subjective value and the law of cause and effect to explain how the value of labor, land, and capital goods were ultimately determined by consumer wants. For this purpose, he introduced the concept of orders of goods. Consumer goods, like bread for sale at a bakery or supermarket, are goods of the first or lowest order. The flour, ovens, and baker services needed to produce bread are second-order goods. Third-order goods are the wheat, milling equipment, and the services of the laborers, which together transform the wheat into flour. And fourth order goods are the farm, land, labor, and equipment that are combined to produce the wheat. Menger pointed out that production proceeds by transforming higher order goods into successively lower order goods until the lowest order good emerges from the process ready for consumption. In this sense, the cause of the lower order good, like bread, is the combination of the immediately higher order goods, the flour, ovens, etc., that were combined to produce the bread. Menger explained further that although the production of consumer goods is caused by the possession of higher order goods, the value of consumer goods is not. In fact, Menger asserted, value is imputed backwards from the consumer wants to consumer goods and up through successively higher orders of goods. For example, if people suddenly chose not to consume tobacco products, the value of cigarettes, cigars, and pipes would fall to zero. As a result, the value of cigarette and cigar rolling machines and raw tobacco would lose all their value. The value of higher order producer goods like tobacco growing land and equipment, assuming they had no alternative uses, would also fall to zero. Menger thus demonstrated that production does not cause the value of consumer goods, but that human wants and choices cause the value of consumer goods, which in turn cause the value of producer goods. In other words, contrary to the classical economists, costs of production do not determine prices, but prices determine costs of production. Pearls are not expensive because it's very costly to dive for oysters and extract the pearls, but people are willing to incur the high costs of diving for oysters because they value pearls so highly. Menger also applied his principles of subjective value and marginal utility to explaining why voluntary exchange takes place. Classical economists believed that exchange indicated an equality of value between the two goods exchanged because value and price was established by cost of production. Menger was dissatisfied with this explanation and showed that exchange resulted from a double inequality of values of the goods exchanged. For instance, A gives 100 bushels of wheat to B in exchange for a horse. Since people are always striving to economize their goods, the implication is that both A and B are satisfying more important wants by making the exchange. If this is true, then A values the horse he receives more highly than the quality of wheat that he gives up in the exchange. Likewise, B values the wheat he receives more highly than the horse he sacrifices. Thus, both parties to the exchange value the goods unequally and in reverse order. And this is true of all voluntary exchanges. Menger also brilliantly explained the limits to the number of exchanges that will take place between the two parties. If the exchange rate between wheat and horses remains at 100 bushels per horse, then A and B will continue to exchange up to the point where at least one of the parties doesn't value the good purchased above the good sold. For example, as A continues to trade wheat for horses, the marginal utility and value of wheat rises as his supply is reduced, while the marginal utility and value of horses declines as his supply of horses expands. Eventually, let's say after three exchanges, the value to A of a fourth horse will fall below the marginal utility of another 100 bushels subtracted from his shrinking supply of wheat, and A will therefore refuse to make the next exchange. At the end of the exchange process, then, A and B will have adjusted their supplies of the two goods so that there are no more opportunities for a mutually beneficial exchange. Menger went on to explain the determination of a price on the basis of subjective value and the law of marginal utility. He showed how in a market with multiple buyers and sellers, the price of the good and the quantity exchanged are determined at the point of rest or equilibrium, where all mutual gains from trade have been completely eliminated. Of course, the equilibrium price for each good varies from day to day, or even from moment to moment, because people's wants and values and the amounts and varieties of goods produced are continually changing and creating new opportunities for mutually beneficial exchange. Menger's theory of price gives a realistic and systematic account of how prices of all consumer and producer goods throughout the economy are ultimately determined by the subjective values and choices of consumers. This theory, as extended and refined by his followers, especially Eugen von Bamberger, Ludwig von Mises, and Murray Rothbard, remains the core of modern Austrian economics. Menger made a number of other important contributions to Austrian economics in the areas of money, capital, and economic method. I will discuss one here which pertains to the origins of money. According to Menger, money originated from the actions of a multitude of individuals seeking to satisfy their wants by exchanging with others. Without money, in order for a trade to take place between person A and person B, A must want what B has and have what B wants. Absent this double coincidence of wants, person A may be willing to accept a good other than the one he wants with the intention of later exchanging it for the ones he does want, as long as it is perceived as being more readily saleable than the good he holds. In this indirect exchange, transactions are facilitated more easily and the conditions of the parties involved are improved, thus creating a preference for a medium of exchange. Menger pointed out that it is not necessary or even conceivable for money to be established by some authoritarian decree or an explicit contract among the citizens, and that no historical record of any government's creation of money can be found. The more plausible explanation is that money originates spontaneously because the immediate benefit of using the more marketable good as a medium exchange is recognized by the parties involved. Menger's greatest achievement and the essence of his revolution in economic theory was clearly demonstrating that money prices are the outcome of people striving to most efficiently satisfy their most important wants. For Menger, the subjective and unobservable values of individuals are the ultimate cause of all objective economic events. It is this brilliant vision of Menger's that contemporary Austrian economists still follow in developing economic science as a study of human action. Today, Karl Menger stands as the underappreciated founder of an entire school of economic thought, and we encourage you to learn more about Menger and read his great book, Principles of Economics, at no cost, online at Mises.org.